Welcome to We Are The Watchers.
This is 178 episodes, I mean.
Nice.
You are wearing a Pop-Tart t-shirt today, Tom, and I applaud and embrace that.
Thank you. It's because I'm gooey warm on the inside.
And what, crusty on the outside?
Very crusty. Very crusty. Youngest daughter has conjunctivitis.
So right.
Yeah, crust is a major factor of life at the moment. Yeah. Whoa!
Isn't that highly contagious as well? So everybody will have it soon,
oh,
right?
I can't wait.
Yeah, that'll be good.
Keep my glasses on at all times.
Yeah, you should wear those industrial like welding goggles.
I do own those.
Why are you not wearing them? Well, obviously it's fine here, but... Yeah. Pop-Tarts, though, do they still sell them in Australia?
Yeah. Specialty stores.
Right. Because I remember they used to be in supermarkets.
Same places I go to buy my Dr. Pepper or Faygo.
Yeah, yeah. Wait, which one's Faygo? Is that the blue one?
Faygo is like fruit drink. It's what the Insane Clown Posse are all about.
So it's not carbonated?
Some of them are. Some of them are not. But, yeah, it's from the deep south.
And your Faygo of choice?
Cotton candy one is pretty good. Blue raspberry is also not bad.
Maybe I've seen you with the blue raspberry and that's why I've got that connection with the blue.
It's very strong blue.
Do you feel like maybe you shouldn't have any more sugar for the next week?
No. So it's not like a Mountain Dew punch in the face of the sugar hit. It's a lot more gentle than
that.
Yeah.
So you can slam them down fast.
Yeah, fruity drinks. Yummy, yummy, yummy.
Greetings, subscribers and members of the Watchersville latest newsletter. Our resident disco dancing disco man, Terry Astor, is recovering from what doctors believe to be a bout of disco fever. No, seriously. That's what they told us. It all happened when the music took control and he was unable to stop moving to the funky, funky beat. This caused him to overheat, suffer dehydration and a high temperature. This news has worried his close family, friends and fans as he's set to compete in the Boogie Down Dance-a-thon later in the month. This is a setback as the recovery time he needs will be eating into his training schedule in the lead-up to the competition. The 42-time champion has his eyes set on a 43rd win. If crowned this year, he will hold the record for the person who has listened to the Bee Gees Staying Alive the most ever in the history of the whole entire world. So here's hoping for a full recovery, Terry. The Watchersville Museum of Things That Go in a Museum will be adding Sharon Stone's black turtleneck top she bought from the Gap store and wore to the 1996 Oscars. Numerous people were hoping for something more naughty from the film Basic Instinct, but it's all about the fashion, darling. It will go on display on Monday. Cleaning out their storage room, the staff at the newsagents found two big boxes of Young Talent Time trading cards circa 1986-ish. Instead of throwing them out, they will sell them for $50 a packet. They're pretty convinced they'll make a small fortune once Danny, Bevan, Joey, Tina and Vince fans find out about them. They're already looking into the price of super yachts and homes in Noosa. That's it for now. Stay safe and happy, all residents of Watchersville.
I got a quiz for you today.
Hurrah.
It's Sesame Street related. I don't even know why.
I love it.
It just came to me. Like it's literally not in any relation to anything else we're going to talk about. But Sesame Street just came into my head when I was like, quiz.
Sure. I've seen a bit of Sesame Street over the last few weeks. I've been watching a bunch of Muppets-related things.
Mm.
Not to talk about.
But just, no. That's just what you're watching.
Yeah.
Sesame Street's not on Disney, is it? That's different.
No. So the Disney company bought the Henson company.
Yep.
But everything to do with Sesame Street is owned by PBS.
Yep. Okay.
They're a separate entity.
Yep. Fair enough. Should we crack into the news?
Yes, let's do it.
Look, a really quick one first off. Elon Musk is going to host SNL.
I had that too.
Oh, cool. Excellent. So that's on the 8th of March, so not long away, not far away.
Yeah. A lot of people are pretty pissed off about that. It's quite divisive.
Can you explain why?
Because he's not an entertainer in any way, shape or form. And the last time that they had someone who was that was Trump. Mm. So it's a really poor way of endorsing someone who is quite a divisive figure.
Look, last time I saw Elon Musk, he was being interviewed by someone, I can't remember now, but the reason I can't remember is because he was sitting there without shoes on and that really put me off.
Sure. He's admitted overnight that this mission to Mars that he's doing, the people will probably die.
Didn't
sugarcoat it.
But isn't that like the context, like the subtext that we all assumed anyway?
Yeah, but for him to just so openly and blithely talk about it is pretty.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know. I enjoy some of his trolling online, but at the same time, is that really someone who should be wielding that much power?
Yeah, true, true. Aren't there, well, at least there was a couple of Aussies who are on the short list. I don't know if that's still the case, though.
I have not followed it enough haven't said my goodbyes yet.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Miley Cyrus is going to be the musical guest, though. This will be her sixth appearance, and I'm wondering if they're going to pair them up with in a skit.
I'm sure they will. I find it odd that Grimes is not the musical host.
Yeah.
His partner. They're not married.
But who will babysit the kid?
Algebra.
Oh, yeah.
Silly. Hey, have you ever watched the program Line of Duty?
No.
No, me neither.
Everybody else in the world seems to.
Seemingly so. Yeah. It has become the most watched drama in the UK. Its penultimate episode hit 10.9 million overnight views, which makes it the most watched thing, drama thing since 2008's Doctor Who Christmas special, which had 11.7 million overnighters.
Did you watch that one? I can't remember.
Yeah, that's old Tenant.
Yeah, okay. Yep.
Old.
Yep.
Since that time, The Bodyguard with Richard Madden in 2018 hit 10.4. Downton Abbey was the biggest before that, 10.6 in 2011.
So, I mean,
this show's huge.
That's 10 years ago.
Yeah, when
people watch television.
That's right, when it was appointment viewing and stuff.
Okay, so maybe we should be jumping on the bandwagon.
No, I'm good.
I just don't have time.
I just have no interest in that.
Super under the pump with everything.
I'll watch Luther.
Yeah, Luther's good.
Luther is really good, but like I don't know. There's too much UK drama for me. It's a bit too dreary.
Yeah, you want the comedies.
Yeah, I want the comedies or punching and flying and, you know, the superhero.
Yeah. I understand. Speaking of punching and flying, guess what they're remaking? Father of the Bride.
I did see something about that.
So this will be the third iteration. You would have had the Spencer Tracy one, then the Steve Martin one, and now this will be the Andy Garcia one, with Gloria Estefan playing his wife.
Sure.
I'm just worried about who's going to play Fronk. Could it just be Martin Short again?
I'm sure John Leguizamo is available. If it's going to be a Latino cast.
I can see that.
Yeah, have him fast-talking old-school style, smarmy.
And wouldn't he have fun? He'd have so much fun in that character. That's what the world needs. I'm glad I watched the Father of the Bride 2 a few weeks ago. I was obviously priming myself for this wonderful news.
Last thing I think I saw Andy Garcia in was as a surly billionaire in Ballers.
The last thing I saw Andy Garcia in was an episode of Modern Love on Amazon Prime.
Wow.
And it took me a couple of minutes to realize it was Andy Garcia.
Yeah, sure.
I hadn't seen him for ages.
Under that beard?
Yeah.
Did you have the beard? Yeah. That beard is crazy.
It really disguises who I remember Andy Garcia being. Anyway, he was great. And I was like, oh, that's nice. But the voice as well, though. The voice kind of was the bit that was like, hang on a second.
I know that voice.
The only show choosing not to keep up with any of the Kardashians. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
So one very exciting thing that has, I can't remember if we talked about it, but Disney showed that they've been working on real lightsabers.
Yeah.
Which is very cool. But another part of that presentation has come to light, a thing that they've been working on in secret for quite a few years called Project Kiwi. Now, the holy grail for theme parks is to have a small self or like an autonomous robot that can walk around doing meet and greets. So you don't have to have someone in costume anymore.
Why pay a person?
But they've been trialing R2-D2 and various droids and things for a few years. Well, they revealed that there is a walking baby Groot.
Oh, cool.
And when I say baby Groot, it's not the baby one from Guardians of the Galaxy 2. He looks like he's probably 6 to 9 months old.
Yeah.
So he's about 3.5, 4 foot tall.
Okay.
So he'd be eye level with kids and stuff. Yep. This thing is amazing.
Does it talk?
in as much as Baby Groot only says, I am Groot.
Yeah.
But yes, variations on that.
I'm just wondering though, like if it interacts, if it hears a voice and then it says Groot.
It will do that stuff, okay. But it's more the fact, like, so they showed video of it, the skeletal structure and stuff like that, because it's been built in such a way that Groot is the shell on it right now, but it could be anything.
Oh, sure, right.
And the videos they're showing, basically they had to reinvent their own system of all the autonomous robots that we see that are walking are generally quadrupeds. They're four legs for better balance. And the bipedal, two-legged ones, are all for industrial settings. So they're very, very large scale. Mm. So they had to come up with, you know, carbon fiber, light skeleton structures and things like that. And it's tethered by a tiny little cable.
Wow.
That's it for programming. When you see it without the stuff on, it's crazy. And it, by all accounts, they've been trialing it for 18 months because there's footage of people like sitting in business meetings in the Imagineers headquarters, and this little pair of legs just goes running past the room and like stops, and the body clearly peeks in and peeks back out and then scurries away. So it has all these different programmed motions and things like that.
Yeah.
And as they started, you know, showing through the years where it's at, where it's at now, even without the skeletal frame and things like that or character on top of it, you can see characteristics of it. You can see it like bobbing.
Isn't that interesting?
And this is really exciting. And this is a huge, huge step forward in believability.
You would think when this comes out onto like parks in amongst the public, surely it's got to have minders.
There will be someone with it all the time, but like they even showed that it's been programmed in such a way that if someone leans on it, it will react with like smooth itself and scurry and right itself.
Yeah.
It can be pushed over.
Yeah, okay.
So there is, you know, pushed over or stolen. They're the two big concerns. So yes, there will be a minder with it all the time, but it's not someone who needs to be there programming it and things like that.
Could it be a character?
Potentially, yeah. But they generally put a human with any character around there because we, the public, need someone to kind of ferry or direct.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I imagine there'll be someone that's still probably dressed in Marvel-related attire and things like that. But yeah, the potential for this thing is just crazy. Like they're going to make a walking Winnie the Pooh, and that's just the coolest thing in the world.
I'm a bit worried about the Tigger one when they make that, because that's going to be a lot.
Well, the Tigger one, I could see they've been also working on this Spider-Man stunt suit, and it's essentially a thing. It looks human, and they can put the Spider-Man suit over it, and it looks enough human, but it's actually all these pistons and robotics inside that they're going to use for stunt shows. So this thing can flip in the air and it's powered by drone technology and stuff like that, so they can shoot it into the air and it makes acrobatic movements in the style of Spider-Man.
Wow.
So they can do a lot of, you know.
I can't even imagine that right now.
What I imagine is they're going to have some sort of stunt show and someone dressed as Spider-Man will run behind a dumpster where this actual thing is set off to dive, you know, jump.
Yeah, climb five the wall stories, or whatever.
All amazing. This sort of stuff. Yeah. So they're working on some really crazy stuff. Gosh. And I could see this jumping stuff that they've got could work really well for Tigger and characters that require a lot of motion, because this is on the absolute other end. This is really slow moving, gentle, interacting with children type of thing. Because if they can get that working first, then they can convince adults.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But yeah, they've been trying for this for so, so long.
This almost could be a movement away from so much CGI to these robots in movies and film.
Very, very much so.
How interesting.
Yeah. So it could be 10 years, but we will end up seeing a Guardians of the Galaxy style film where instead of having Sean Gunn wearing a green suit running around, they have pre-programmed his movements into a robot that acts on set. And then is done, you know, CGI's enhanced and things on top of it.
But
on the flip side, this is also how you get Terminator.
Oh, no.
Or more specifically, the rebooted version of Chucky.
Oh, no, there's no good in any of those two stories.
That's what I mean. Corrupted AI. But corrupted AI in a tiny baby Groot.
Cute.
Very cute.
Properly powered like a Petrelli brother. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
Do you want to know how much Netflix top executives made last year.
All of the dollars?
Yeah, a fair bit, because I don't want to shock you, but Netflix had a pretty good year last year. A lot of people were at home watching television. Well, Netflix. I'm just going to throw some figures out. Reed Hastings, who is the co-CEO and founder, $43.2 million. His co-CEO made $39.3 million. Spencer, who's the CFO, made 12.9, spewing, and the chief product officer made 20.8 million. Combined, Netflix paid them over 100 million US dollars.
Yeah. Mm.
2020 was good for some people.
It certainly was. It will be interesting to see what sort of decisions they made that led to them getting those bonuses, because there's been very little good content on Netflix in a while. And, you know, they keep saying, oh, the next season of You is coming and the next season of Witcher is coming. Just stay tuned, everyone.
Yeah, get ready. Stranger Things so next year.
They right now are where Disney Plus was a year ago of.
Isn't that funny?
Hold tight. Stuff's coming. The stuff you want is coming.
Because we were sort of looking at Disney, you know, last year saying, well, you know, like it's great because you have all the back catalogue, so you're rewatching stuff or exploring stuff for the first time, but older things, where Netflix was constantly new. And whilst they still have new stuff coming out, the quality has dropped somewhat.
Yeah.
There's not as many talk of the town shows.
No.
Mm.
I'm sure they're chomping at the bit for Stranger Things and various others to drop and get the water cooler action happening again.
I did drop a little comment on it was an IGN post about that, saying that the recap had better be really good because none of us will remember it. We got some laughs out of that, and then other people who just didn't get it and were like, why don't you just rewatch the episodes again? I'm like, it was a joke. It was.
Also, do you have 24 hours or whatever it is to catch up?
Can't be bothered.
No, it's too much.
I've already watched it. Enjoy it the first time.
Yeah. Got one more piece of news, but I feel like we should put it behind the spoiler warning.
Okay.
And I've got a trailer.
Well, let's get into the trailers because I got a trailer as well.
All right. So the trailer, I can't believe that this has rolled around again already, but Camp Cretaceous Season 3 is dropping May 21.
What? I feel like it was a couple of months ago that you were talking about the finale of season 2. That's wild.
I think it was only like February or something like that that I was talking about season 2.
Crazy.
So I think they're doing that Netflix model of animated series where they do one season that they break it up into two and, you know, do 8-episode drops or whatever. But the fact that they've got this one ready now means that the announcement they made back in October last year or whatever is actually to do with this. So it means it'll probably be a season 4 in a handful of months as well. Another 8 episodes. Season 2 ended with the kids finding a way off the island, very excited in the water, and the trailer makes it very clear that within the first episode there's going to be a storm that dumps them back on the island.
Feels a bit lost, as in the show Lost.
Yes. So also at the end of season 2, they had discovered that Dr. Henry Wu, who is the geneticist that created the dinosaurs in the first movie, but he's also directly responsible for the Indominus Rex, the one that can camouflage and stuff by gene splicing.
Mm-hmm.
They found a secret bunker of his on the island where he was making stuff without anyone's knowledge.
Mm-mm.
And something worse than the Indominus Rex has gotten out.
Of course. Yes. There's no good that comes from Jurassic Park worlds.
It's called like File 370 or something like that, and the trailer makes it look like this thing is out to stalk them. The show is way better than it deserves to be. I find it hilarious because my 3-year-old kid cousin is obsessed with it. He's loving it, and so am I.
That's awesome.
And we're enjoying it on very different levels
of
and
course.
Stuff. And some of it is genuinely scary. I don't see Shay enjoying it.
Mm.
She's not the right age for it. But still, the fact that season 3 is rolling around so quickly is awesome.
That's really, really good news. Mm. It's so funny that we were just talking about how Netflix doesn't have anything, and then you came up with that trailer, and then I've got another trailer for a Netflix show, Master of None.
Yeah, basically, Aziz's show.
Yeah, they basically just dropped the fact that season 3 is a thing and it's coming out. Season 2 came out 2017.
Well, Aziz got cancelled in the middle there, and he's come back. But like his of all the people that had abuse claims lobbed at them, his was the most, I won't say gentle, but, you know, he had relations with somebody who, and afterwards she said that it was not consensual and he was
he was under the impression.
I'm so sorry. I thought you were.
Yeah, right.
So he had to go and do some soul searching. It wasn't like a Harvey Weinstein.
I see. Yeah.
I've done this repeatedly.
Yeah. 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 Well, okay. That I'd forgotten about that. So
I can see that's why they might not be pushing it quite as hard.
And also, why season three is what it is. So it's actually got Lena Waithe's character Denise and what is clearly her girlfriend in the trailer. And it looks like they are the only two characters in this whole entire season. There will only be five episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like it's going through their relationship from start to finish.
All right.
Potentially finish. I don't know. Very COVID fitting that there's only two characters on screen. And that would explain why you don't see him.
Yeah.
Mm.
Also, some people think Eric Wareheim, who I can't remember his character's name, but he's Aziz's best mate.
Yeah.
He might be a bit problematic too.
Oh, okay.
So maybe they're just, you know, pushing the focus on the ladies.
Yep. Why not?
Shake up the format.
Yeah. And Lena definitely, like her profile definitely blew up after, well, thanks to Masters of None and then afterwards. Like I've seen her in quite a few things.
Sure.
So it makes sense to focus on her. She's great.
Got a watching suggestion? Email thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
All right, we do have that Sesame Street quiz coming up for us very soon, but we've got to watch some stuff. Well, no, we've got to talk about the things that we've watched.
That's right.
Whew, sentences.
Woof.
All right, what do you want to start with? I think I know where that news spoiler story has to go.
Yeah. Do you want? Should we just do that one now?
Let's do that one now.
Rip off the Band-Aid?
Yeah, go on.
All right, so Falcon and the Winter Soldier, my apologies, Captain America and the Winter Soldier wrapped up their first and potentially only season. If it comes back for another, it's probably going to be called Captain America and the Winter Soldier. Oh, what happened to my brain?
Yeah, I was like, oh, I thought you were trying to think of another name and I went, oh, I don't remember Winter Soldier
getting
a different title.
Because my brain wants it to be Captain America and the White Wolf.
Oh.
I thought Bucky moved past the Winter Soldier, so he should have been known as well. Anyway.
Not yet.
I really enjoyed that season finale. It wasn't a perfect finale, but they had so many balls in the air and they clearly had to readjust storylines because of COVID. Where they landed, I was very happy with. The comics accurate suit for Falcon was pretty crazy.
And yet people online were complaining about the fact it looked horrible, not realizing that it was based on the comic. I knew it was based on the comic.
Every other MCU uniform has gone through some change from the comic book. So it was very strange that this one has had no change. And I suspect that, A, it may be a little bit COVID related.
Oh, okay.
That they may have gone with that costume there because his next appearance, that's when they can already start to tweak it.
Right.
Because most of them,
It's
the second appearance where they really nail the costume. So anyway, I thought it looked very cool. It was just weird that, you know, I can't remember ever seeing a real, like a live action version of a costume where the top of the scalp is open.
It was really...
Just let the hair through. It was all to show that this is a black man.
Yeah, fair enough. So I had Google imaged him, that character. So I had seen the costume and it's funny that I thought the costume... I didn't notice the strangeness of the bare head in the drawings, but in person, that's what looked a bit.
It really stands out.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's all pretty funky cool glasses. I like the fact that it has two red wings, the drones on the back.
Yep.
We got a tiny bit of redemption for John Walker, who got a new name as U.S. agent, which we suspected. I don't know if I talked about it, but there was no one else that could be the power broker other than Sharon. I didn't see that as a huge twist, but I still enjoyed it where some of the complaints leveled against this finale were, it didn't wrap up all the stuff. Well, if you thought it was going to wrap up everything, you haven't been watching any Marvel movies because that's not what they do. They set bits up for later. So yeah, Sharon Carter.
Constantly moving.
Sharon Carter, the blonde lady who is now back in the government and able to sell... state secrets, essentially. I think she's either going to appear in the Secret Invasion film, Secret Invasion series.
Yeah, that we've talked about Olivia Wilde and
Olivia Colman.
Colman, sorry. And who's the somebody? Who was the other person?
Ben Mendelsohn.
That's right.
Sam Jackson.
Yeah, heaps of people.
A lot of people. So I think she'll either go into that one and be a Skrull, or there's going to be Armor Wars, which is a War Machine series, Don mm-hmm. Cheadle,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to be following him when some of, you know, Tony Stark's tech gets out into the black market. And so he goes out in the War Machine stuff to try and shut that down. Yeah, so I could see her potentially being the one selling those secrets.
But she was super ballsy about it. Like, she was literally walking out of the building down the stairs, and she's like, I'm going to sell state secrets again. Ha ha.
Yes. So she's she's all about that.
Yeah.
Then you got Zemo. He's back in jail.
Yep.
But it was his butler.
Yep.
That done it. The butler did it. That is setting up Thunderbolts, which we've talked about as being the Suicide Squad type yeah. version, or, you know, villains pretending to be heroes.
Mm.
And then Julia Louis-Dreyfus, I think her character is setting up Dark Avengers, which is the government mandated team of anti-heroes slash villains pretending.
So that's where John Walker came?
Yes. So he's with her now, and I can see him being the bad Captain America, or the, you know, the mirror version Captain America.
Yep.
And we know that her character, she was supposed to be in Black Widow, whether that still happens or not.
Yeah, could
so
still.
She could end up with one of the other Black Widows as part of her squad.
Oh, right, okay.
Things like that. So it set up a lot of stuff for the future. I quite enjoyed. But the one thing that I most enjoyed was the next day after the episode was Marvel announcing that Captain America 4 is in the works, mm-hmm. starring Anthony Mackie and written by Morgan Spellman, who was the executive producer on this show. Got a good handle of those two characters. I imagine that Bucky will be in that film as well.
Have to.
And then they've clarified further today that if anything comes of the rumored Chris Evans appearances again, that he won't be in that. He won't be overshadowing Anthony Mackie's Captain America.
I think that's good. Yeah, we want to get to know what Anthony Mackie's Captain America is like.
That's it. We've moved on from Steve Rogers.
Yeah.
They will go back there because that's what comic books do. And if Chris Evans is interested, they'll throw money at him.
Yeah.
But I could see him very much being like Robert Downey Jr. in this Spider-Man movie, where he was the mentor and appearing for a few scenes and this sort of stuff.
Mm.
Or when they do an alternate universe or somewhere in the multiverse and they find an evil Steve Rogers, or, you know, they've already – one of the animated What If – like the What If series, one of the episodes is going to be What If Peggy Carter took the super soldier serum and became Captain Britain. And Steve Rogers ends up in an experimental Stark suit. So it's going to be Cap as 1940s Iron Man.
I can picture it too.
You really can, hey?
Yeah.
You think about that suit that Tony built in the terrorist pit.
Yeah.
Kind of like that.
Yeah.
There's a character in the Hellboy universe called Sledgehammer.
Mm-hmm.
And he is a giant robot built in the 40s.
It almost, I'm going to have a look at that character, because in my head I'm almost getting, you know those sort of, back in like the 40s and 50s, they would do artworks of what they think the future would have looked like.
Yep.
That's what I'm.
So think steampunk, very much steampunk, yep, okay. And also think Rocketeer, which is hilarious because, do you know the Rocketeer?
Yeah.
From years ago, right?
Yeah,
I love that movie.
Yeah.
So Joe Johnston directed that, and he also directed the first Captain America, the one set in the 40s. So that's his visual style.
Yeah, okay.
He's good at that.
So what have we got next? We've got Loki for series that's coming up
so
next.
So Loki is coming out very soon, as is Black Widow.
Yeah.
Black Widow is due out at the end of May, early June. Mm-hmm. Or no. Maybe we get Loki.
I can't
and then
remember
it's
now.
July.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think it was moved to July.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, we get both of those. Then we've got Shang-Chi and mm-hmm. Eternals.
Mm-hmm.
We know that we may get some of the What If TV series later this year. We've also got MODOK starting on Hulu. MODOK is the mental organism designed only for killing.
That's right.
Voiced by Patton Oswalt.
Yep.
The first clip I saw of that was great, but then there was a trailer came out the other day that made me go, okay, this has a lot of potential. This could be very, very silly.
This works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like Deadpool, but with action figures.
Look, that sounds like it would work and it makes sense. So at the end of last week's Fear, I said to myself and then said out loud to you, what on earth, where on earth is the story going to go now? Because that looked like it just went, here we go, here's a bow, there's see you later. And then you said, oh, but what about the graffiti people? And I went, oh, yeah, I completely and utterly forgotten about them. And then they mentioned them like within the first 30 seconds of this episode.
Yeah, they were scrambling a lot of this episode to create new tension and new problems. And this is, I'll be honest, I hated this episode.
You know what I didn't like? And I know it was a whole storytelling.
Are you going to say his narration?
I didn't like it.
I don't think he liked it. It felt like he was being made to read those lines.
Read the lines.
Yeah. Just, I don't know.
Yeah, it was really frustrating. The fact that he potentially had done some of these things, so he's going to go away. And he's like, oh, I've done this before, and I set some fire to something. I'm like, I don't remember that.
But then he's just spent the last half a season pretending to do all that.
And I left that episode confused.
Do we know for certain that he's not still pretending? Like, I know what's her name, Sarah, walking out was like, oh, it's pretty hard to fake that stuff. But
he's done it before.
Yeah. I don't know. And, like, the amount of times that Strand has almost been killed and it's been a fake out.
What I thought was interesting was June triumphantly walked away at the end of last week's episode, and she's like, and it really felt like she's not coming back for ages. She's going. And then they said at some point during this episode, oh, she's off doing something with someone. I'm like, oh, so she didn't just walk off and say stuff.
She let everyone know where she was going.
And then showed up again. I was like, what? This episode, I'm sure, was written by someone who had never written an episode before.
I
haven't done the research, but it felt like that.
It did feel like that. I'm not sure about timeline, but this might be where COVID starts to kick in.
Yeah, okay.
So maybe there was a whole lot of scramble done in this.
It was a messy, confusing episode, and yeah. I don't know where we're supposed to go after this.
And yesterday, like last week's episode, everyone was standing out the front with guns drawn at each other, and this one they all stand around and have a confab. I don't know. Maybe it'll be better next week. Both still dirty that they killed John Dory.
I was just about to say that. Yeah, I'm like, that was, two episodes in and now we've hit that.
And, like, Dakota, the youngest, yep. Virginia's younger sister, are we just going to get the same storyline of from actual Walking Dead of when Alpha's daughter defected?
It felt like that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But Dakota is dangerous?
I thought Lydia would be much more dangerous, but anyway, we'll see. Maybe she is going to be a bit of a snake in the grass and stab everyone.
This is the one.
Who knows?
Yep.
If you aren't getting your watches fixed just by listening, follow the watches on Twitter and Instagram.
Let's get into some other stuff we've been
watching. Yeah, all right. So I've got a few that I want to get through real quick. And then just some. Hey, this was fun.
Yeah.
So Running Wild with Bear Grylls is back for a new season.
Nice.
There's been some great guests. He had Terry Crews on, Rainn Wilson, Keegan-Michael Key. But the one I particularly enjoyed was Anthony Mackie was on. And I enjoyed it so much because Bear Grylls' accent wouldn't let him say the word falcon. He kept calling him Falcon. Falcon, 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 Falcon. And you could see Anthony Mackie's, like, Marvel PR training kick in every single time of wanting to correct and be like, no, I'm going to let this guy in his weird accent say it wrong. So tell me, is this like, do you feel like the Falcon? Yeah, man, Falcon would definitely behave this way.
It was a long shoot for him, sounds like.
But every single one of them had a ball of time. Terry Crews was very, very open and vulnerable, as you would expect. Rainn Wilson complained and threatened Bear's life the entire time. Keegan-Michael Key, lots of laughs.
Yeah, that would have been a fun one.
Yeah, just I love that show. It's very easy, very throwaway. Good times. Over on Impractical Jokers, they've just wrapped up their most recent season. And it's something I've been waiting to hit properly because about 6 weeks, maybe even 2 months ago, each night, Joe Gatto, who is kind of the brains behind the show, but he had to host something called G'day Mate.
How did he say G'day Mate?
Oh, G'day Mate. Like, he had a real go at it and stuff. But basically, what we saw on the show last night, because it finally went to air, is that he lost a punishment. And because of COVID, they're doing very creative things like that. So his punishment was at 2:30 a.m. every day for a week. he had to get up and give a half hour broadcast to Australia live traffic update and news update of what was going on in the country. He also had to play didgeridoo and eat a meat pie.
I hope not all at once.
All smashed into that half hour block. And like he learned that he could use the didgeridoo to cool down the pie, like blow through and stuff like that. He's a vegan, so they weren't real meat
pies. Oh, okay. All right.
But
so with the traffic updates,
yeah.
that'd be a bit rough, trying to get the names right.
Oh, it was hilarious. He's like, is there an update for the Princess Highway? Because it's 2:30 in the morning and the guy's got young kids, he's dead by day four. And he's like, all right, and now some news from Tasmania. And all like, it was hilarious.
Oh, my God.
Because this is the guy that you can't embarrass, and they have to get very creative with their punishments on him because he just doesn't react the same way as the others do to things.
You
can't embarrass him, so you have to do stuff that is an actual punishment, not so much fun. And, yeah, he was not enjoying this.
What? Who's – the idea is so out there.
Mm-hmm.
But that's them, isn't
G'day,
it?
G'day, mate.
Look, speaking of G'day, mate, I've been watching a couple of episodes and I'm trying to actually savour them of the ABC show Fisk with Kitty Flanagan.
Sure, yes.
The first episode I watched, I was like, oh, this is really good. It's got also got Julia Zamero in it, Marty Sheargold, Aaron Chen's in it. The show is...
Chendog.
Yeah, the show is hilarious and I am so glad that we've got a show that can... It almost fit... It's very different, but for me it fills that utopian or the Rob Sitch utopia show hole at the moment. So I view free watch.
Nice.
That's all I want to say.
That's good feedback. Lego Masters Season 3 is in full flight and we are loving that. That's on Sundays, Mondays and Tuesdays.
It's just last so week of Wednesdays, good.
Isn't it? And like the only conflict that comes on the show is when they've got to say goodbye to someone and Brickman almost always cries. He's like, oh, I can't believe I'm smooshing someone's light here.
Now, I know you spoke about it last week, but that opening, that first episode, the level of talent with these builds is ridiculous. And this is just, you know, it was just the first week.
That was
week.
The first week.
Ridiculous.
The stuff that's been coming out is amazing. So, yeah, there's a pair of guys. One of them's, I think he's a structural engineer and the other one is a robotics engineer and he did all the animatronics for Walking with Dinosaurs. The stuff they are making is mind-blowing. There was a snow globe episode the other day where they created a fox inside a snowstorm. And this thing, I don't know how they got the eyes to sit that the way, but the ears pricked up and everything, like it had just caught a smell. And the thing was reacting like it had just caught something. Like even the haunches were stretched properly. And it's show is so good.
Yeah.
But I want to jump over to, I told you I've been watching a bit of wrestling stuff.
Yeah.
I watched two wrestling adjacent things this week that were both great.
Wrestling adjacent. I'm trying to think of how adjacent a wrestling
So a good way to explain wrestling adjacent is something that's not made by the WWE.
Okay.
So these are two shows that are both on A&E, which I forget what that stands for.
Arts and entertainment.
It could very well
could be
that. It might be something education.
Oh, yeah.
But they do a lot of documentaries and stuff. So there was an A&E Legends on Stone Cold Steve Austin, like an hour and a half documentary on his thing. But it wasn't hour and a half of him in the ring. It was hour and a half of kind of the decisions that had led him to where he ended up in life and this sort of stuff.
Yeah, right.
All very interesting, but very much in the same way that you watch something about a Michael Jordan or, you know, whoever is the top dog at their sport. When you actually, or Tiger Woods, when you peel back some layers, you realize that there's been a lot of sacrifice. And it's not just sacrificing stuff on the field, it's sacrificing relationships and being selfish to the point of believing in yourself so much that fuck anyone else.
Mm.
And so, you know, Stone Cold's been through several divorces and he talks very openly about how one of the few regrets he has in life is that he does not have much relationship with his daughters.
Yeah, right.
Because he was on the road. You know, 11, you'd be on the road for 11 days, then get 2 days off. And he said quite openly, he said, those 2 days I spent at home working on my barbecue, flipping meats and drinking beer. I wasn't a good dad, but I was focused on my sport and taking myself to the highest level I could. And they were distractions. I was like, wow, to hear someone
That's
talk about
brutal
it.
Brutal honesty.
Yep. And Yeah, just to see him lay it out that matter-of-factly of like, these are the decisions I made. This is why I will be remembered as a legend forever. Mm. I am unhappy.
So how old are his kids? Sort of. Like, are they adults?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So there was the last footage that was publicly shown to them was in about 2003, okay. And they were probably a 10
yeah,
at the
right,
time
okay.
or something like that. So.
Anyway. Interesting.
And the other show on A&E that's just kicked off, and I've watched the first two episodes, is called WWE's Most Wanted Treasures. Now, you know there's those shows where someone's like, I've got 3/4 of a collection of something and I want to hire someone who goes and picks and goes and finds it and then barters a deal for me and gets the best deal. So WWE, Steph McMahon and her husband Triple H, mm-hmm. who are creative control now on the show, they have launched a WWE museum and they've hired an archivist and all this sort of stuff. There's so many great props over the last 50 years, very iconic stuff, that they should have a display place for this sort of stuff, and they want to start this museum. So each episode is getting one or a tag team or whatever, but one big superstar from the past to head out with the archivist and go to various fans who've got stuff that was important from their career and to try and barter the cheapest thing possible to get it in there. The first episode is with Mick Foley, who's the king of hardcore, played 3 different characters, very much an everyman character, was never muscly, big fat guy, could take a hit like no one else. Mm. One of my favorite wrestlers of all time. And his is to find like the original Mankind mask, to find a Cactus Jack jacket, all these sorts of things. And I like that sort of show anyway, where they go and track stuff down, but to show up with the celebrity or with the sports person who that stuff is associated with, seeing the people go from like, hey, welcome in, every time it just blows their minds,
yeah.
And he can make some sort of deal with them where it's like, look, I can't afford $7,000 for this, but what about if I arrange so the next pay-per-view you're buying, I'll come over and watch it with you and your friends. They're like, that's a pretty good deal.
That's almost priceless.
Yes.
Yeah.
So first episode was that. Second episode was Undertaker and Kane. Mm-hmm. And it's hilarious because Undertaker was like one of the most respected people in 30 plus years and only ever talked in the dead man voice. And this is stuff. And now that he's retired, he's popping up on every documentary series I'm watching at the
moment.
And he's just super casual Texan.
That's cool.
And Kane is the mayor in his town or like – okay. Maybe even in the governor. No, Jesse Ventura became governor of his state. Kane is on trajectory to be that. It's hilarious because Kane was Undertaker's mute burned brother.
Oh my God. Yeah. From that to that.
Yep.
Wow. Okay. That is a move.
So it is hilarious that he's in charge now.
Yeah.
A bunch of wrestlers have gone on to political careers. They really know how to work a crowd.
Mm.
They spent a long time.
Yeah. It's not something that you immediately see the connection in, but once you start thinking about it, you're like, oh,
yeah. So this show is incredibly, your mileage may vary.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on whether you give a shit about wrestling and stuff at all.
And eras as well, I guess.
Very much eras, because I think we'll jump around. I have a feeling we're going to get a Ric Flair episode, and that means that they're tracking down stuff from 70s onwards. We may get a Macho Man episode, even though Randy Macho Man Savage is dead.
Mm-hmm.
There's certain characters that I think are too important to that archive to not be included, even though their performer is no longer with us.
Yeah, but, you know, you can always speak to people around them.
Yeah, but just, I don't know, in terms of seeing the haggling. So the first episode, Mick Foley, as I said, he's an everyman. Everything that he was offering was always, I'm going to go over and above to try and seal this deal. Then you get Undertaker and Kane, who are the opposite end of the wrestling spectrum. Hard men, don't talk much, giant, you know, both of them are at least 6'6", massive dudes.
Massive.
Who did not barter and actively made it more difficult for the archivist to try and get a reasonable price. Like the other person would say something, they'd be like, oh, come on, man, this is important history. It should be not $8,000, 10. You should be paying 10. It's going to charity, you cheapo. So it's going to be interesting to see how that dichotomy flips every week depending on who they get to come out.
It's a really original idea.
It really is, and it melds together a whole bunch of different shows, but it's got its own tone.
And that was A&E, you said,
yes? Yes.
Hmm.
So, yeah, wrestling. I didn't expect to be back into the wrestling right now. I'm not watching any actual wrestling shows, but, like, between those and the documentaries and watching Young Rock and stuff, I don't know, wrestling's come back into my life a little bit at the moment.
It must feel good, though.
It does.
Turns out it's easy being green. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
I don't think I've spoken about this game before, but I wanted to talk about it today because I had a good session with the cousins. Jasper was there and Tidy as well. We played a board game called Sheriff of Nottingham.
Right.
And it is almost like a customs game where I think they call the asymmetrical games, where one person plays the sheriff of Nottingham and the others are all merchants who are trying to get into Nottingham to sell their goods. But as the sheriff, say I'm the sheriff, I will stand at the gate of Nottingham and not let anyone in unless I approve it. Some merchants are trying to smuggle in contraband.
Oh, guys.
Get a bit of extra money, you know, like times are tough. So they'll lie about what they've got. But the sheriff is not above having some bribes sent in their direction. So, for example, say you are you're trying to smuggle in a bit of, I don't know, pepper, a bit of spices. It's contraband in Nottingham. You're not allowed that. It's contraband. And I can see in your face, you're lying. You're lying. I know you've got it. And you're like, no, I don't have it.
Would you like these two chickens?
Yeah, exactly. Or you can say, would you like two gold to not check mine, but maybe check Jasper's? Because I saw him trying to smuggle in a crossbow last week. So there's a lot of that. There's a lot of backstabbing.
And you enjoy that sort of stuff in a game? You like undermine someone else?
What I like about it is that each time a round happens, the sheriff changes. So everybody gets a chance to be sheriff. So you can't be too underhanded because it's going to come back to you at some point.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a board game I enjoy called Unfair, which is you're creating theme parks and stuff, but you can undermine your other players.
Yeah, right.
And they've had to bring out another version called Funfair because so many people complained that the game is great, but the knocking down everyone else sucks.
Yeah, right.
So that's why I asked you that game. But it sounds like if you get to swap who it is each turn,
it evens out.
Yeah, okay.
It definitely evens out. But I also think you'd need the right group to play this. You know,
need people that know each other well.
Exactly. And who are willing to, you know, throw someone under the bus, but it'd still be funny. Like it's a funny thing. You'll also get what I enjoy are the people who just go, nah, but I'm going to check your bags. Check them. I don't care. Just check them. Like just flatly lie to your face if you're the sheriff. But one tactic I was using that got me really close to winning was whenever I was sheriff, I'd say, look, guys, whether you're lying or not, I don't really care. Why don't we just do a blanket fee of two gold to come in? So you're collecting little bits of money. And then when it's someone else's turn to be sheriff, you say, look, I only charge you two to come in. So
sure.
And you slowly get the points and the money up. And yeah, it's almost like a sneaky way of getting close. But I didn't win though. I didn't bring enough contraband in. But a lot of fun, really, really fun.
Nice.
Yeah, we had a really good time. We were going to play Pandemic again, but we got sidetracked and we just played that instead the whole time. Anything else you've watched?
Nah, I've been painting.
Hang on, what have you been painting?
Just Warhammer.
How's it going?
Really good. There's a long story short, there's a new range of elves out called the Lumineth, and they're all about being balanced and one with nature. So instead of being, you know, covered in blood splatter and charging forward with axes and stuff, they're all real stoic and defensive positions. But there's this gorgeous shrine that's sitting on top of, think of Avatar, the mountains that float. And I don't quite understand how they designed it perfectly, but there's a floating mountain. There's a tiny little mountain underneath supporting it and two waterfalls off the front. And I've just been enjoying painting that because instead of angry war guys, it's just painting rocks and flowing water. And
that's where you like to listen to your podcast, right?
Yep.
Or audiobooks or whatever.
Yeah, let me show you a quick photo.
Yeah, I'd like to see it. Okay, so I see it. It's all – you're right. There's like a little base very tiny base that's kind of holding up the rocks. Yeah. But the two waterfalls are sort of creating a tripod almost.
Yes, so it's actually surprisingly sturdy. I don't know why we're talking about this on We Are the Watchers, but yeah, I've been painting rather than playing games and things like that. And
it's stuff we enjoy, basically.
I had 3 whole hours to myself yesterday.
Oh, man.
Which is a rare treat, so that's why I sat down and did that. And yeah, I listened to Impractical Jokers podcasts, yep. Good One, which is I've talked mm-hmm. about that, the comedy one, Warhammer Painting podcast, yeah.
I was cooking last night and I was listening to just the weekly Easy Allies gaming podcast because sure. I was like, oh, I don't really – the only thing I knew about recently was, you know, the Days Gone thing. I'm like, oh, I see what's going on. I didn't retain any information, but it just felt comforting.
Yeah, just nice background stuff.
Yeah.
I had mentioned that there's Horizon Zero Dawn board game. Did you know this?
I did hear there was something about
miniatures one. I actually saw a painting guide.
What does it look like? It
looks pretty cool.
Maybe we can have like a painting board game day where you show me how to paint and I'll explain to you in not – I was going to say excruciating detail. I won't do that to you, just who the characters are.
I've got contrast paints, which are these fancy – they're kind of like inks that dye – but instead of I know they're really difficult to explain, but basically you put down this specific base coat primer yep. and then these paints go across and they stain rather than thickly paint.
Oh, right.
And they're quite vacuous, so they want to fall into crevices and cracks and things like that, and they will stay darker in that.
Is that what was on the waterfall there?
Yes.
Yeah.
But when they're stretched, like when there's flat panels, they stretch across that and it's much lighter. So you don't have to put down base paint, then wash. It's all in one go. And then you can just dry brush a bit over the top to give a bit of highlights.
I think Aloy would look great like that.
I think so too.
Oh, great. Are you ready for a quiz?
Yes, please. Can you tell me how to get to the quiz?
Quiz. Yes, I certainly can. This is about the characters on Sesame Street
All and right.
when they first appeared. So just to give you context, the yes. show started in 1969. So any year before that is going to be incorrect.
True.
I felt that fair, you know. Elmo.
Oh, Elmo was not until, I want to say about 1990,
89? 1980.
Really?
Yeah. I was with you as well.
I'm thinking Abby. Anyway, don't mind me.
Don't retain the information for Abby. That's a clue.
Okay.
Because I she's not in here.
She's not in here. She was a later addition. They keep adding later additions. She's the excitable fairy.
Yes, yes. What about Bert and Ernie? I mean, I can't Ooh. Do one or the other because they're a pair.
And they have to be very early. I'm going to say a 69. Are they there from the get-go?
100%.
Because they were in that apartment.
Yep.
And you don't get a rent-controlled apartment like that without being there early. Okay, cool.
Spot on. What about Oscar the Grouch? Oh. He was one of my favorites.
All right. And yeah, and rightfully so.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to be pretty early too, but I don't think he was there right at the very beginning. But it was that's Frank Oz, so it was still quite early as well.
Mm.
I'll say 71.
Oh, 69. He was there from OG. The beginning. Oh. Yeah, yeah. I like how we act like we remember.
I know. We weren't there. We weren't born.
Zoe, the orange, you know, the orange Muppet. Very Ooh. Bright and happy.
Zoe, is that like 2005?
No, 1993.
Okay.
Yeah.
Again, I think I've swapped Abby and Zoe in my mind.
And there's I can't remember her name, Rosita, something like that. And yeah, she's Rosita. Sort of hanging around between those sure. times as well. Yeah. What about, I was obsessed with this character. Mr. Snuffleupagus.
I knew you were going to bring out
Absolutely
Snuffy.
Absolutely obsessed.
Because Big Bird is the only one that sees him, right?
I think he is seen by others now, I think. Back in our day,
yeah.
he was the
imaginary friend.
Yeah, of Big Bird.
And then they retired him for a while because the original performer died.
Which is fair, okay. but.
But I don't think Snuffy was there from the get-go because I don't think Big Bird was there from the get-go. Anyway, maybe. I'm going to say Snuffy came in 80.
71.
Oh, okay. Very early.
So he was, he was very early. We're going to finish on Big Bird.
All right. Well, Big Bird, I'll say.
He's got to be there before 71.
69.
69, 100%. Yeah, Big Bird.
Carol Spivey.
Do you know, it blew my mind when I found out that he actually had to have
one hand up.
Up in the air. And, like, it made sense, but at the same time you're like, whoa, how did I never think about that?
The way that guy split his own physicality from what was required, because so many of the Muppets, like, it's difficult anyway. They're underneath and they're operating and you've got to perform like that and there's a monitor down there.
Yeah.
But what he was doing of contortion.
One arm up.
Yeah.
Head sort of with the arm so it didn't look like a head.
And then, you know, Big Bird only had one hand operational at a time.
Which I never noticed.
Yeah. It's big on his right hand.
And thus ends the Sesame Street characters quiz.
I enjoyed that one. I was wondering if my boy Telly was going to come up. I got a lot of time for Telly.
I was very close on picking Grover. Slimy. You know, the little Oscar the Grouch's worm. But then I realised I'd run out of characters.
That's all right.
You have to finish on Big Bird.
Yeah.
Like, it's illegal.
It's a very strong choice.
Thank you very much.
But Count, I'm guessing, was there early.
Very early. Actually, let me double check because Count, I think, came in later. Here we go. Let's have a look. 1972.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, he was Jerry Nelson played him till 2012. So there you go. You learn something new every day, unless you already knew that, and then we reiterate something you already knew today.
Today.
On that note, Tom, thank you very much.
Ah.